Well, good Thursday there, football fans, and welcome to the Soccer Central podcast. James Sharman here with you, just on my lonesome today. John Molinaro is working very hard right now with the MLS Super Draft, and actually taping this at 1 o'clock Eastern. The plan for today's show is this. I'll just basically read out the picks as they come down. Every single pick. Round 1, round 2, round 3, and round 4. We'll set a record for the longest ever podcast, not to mention the most boring podcast. I jest, of course, but check out sportsnet.ca. JMO's got you covered, and we will, I'm sure, discuss the Super Draft on next week's podcast. But lots to get to today. Two wonderful guests. Later in today's show, Richard Fitzpatrick joins us from Barcelona. Now, he knows all things La Liga. Big story breaking today. Apparently, FIFA, yes, our beloved FIFA, have banned Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid from transfers for the next two transfer windows. Pretty much the same crime that Barcelona committed. And, of course, they couldn't sign anyone last year, although they did, and Arda Turan and Aleix Vidal, but they put them on ice until now. But still, big punishment for Spanish football and some of their elite. We'll get into that story with him, not to mention Real Madrid in general, what they may or may not do now in the transfer window with, what, 2 weeks left? They can still make moves in this window. What does it mean for Ronaldo and Gareth Bale, Isco, guys that we thought might be leaving Real Madrid? But to start with, we're joined with a rather familiar face in these parts, our very own Craig Forrest. Craig, have you finished, concluded Making a Murderer? Are you up to what episode now?
Number 6.
Number 6. I watched 6 last night as well.
Isn't it? It's incredible.
I told you, right? I told you. 4 and 5 blew my mind.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen anything like it.
The blood vial. What the hell is that about?
Oh, come on.
It's out of control, man. It is.
It's almost like FIFA.
You know what? I was going to say, the strangest part was when even going beyond the highest ranking official who we thought was on Making a Murderer, when Sepp Blatter made that appearance in court, I couldn't believe it. It was stunning. Sepp Blatter behind this entire conspiracy against poor old Steve Avery. I didn't see that coming, but what a series. Beat sport, eh? I'd rather watch this than sport right now. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some good football going on the Premier League. Just absolutely buzzing right now.
There is, yeah. I joked there, of course. I mean, what a Wednesday it was, Craig. We worked it from studio. 23 goals in 7 games on Wednesday. It continues to mystify us. No one really wants this thing. We thought Arsenal did, right? They dropped points. Leicester, I guess they do want it. They're the one team you could say really want this thing. But, I mean, you've watched and played in this league for many, many years. Do you remember a season like this?
No, I don't. We've had some great ones. We've had some fairly dull ones. I mean, last year, Chelsea, you know, they basically led from the start. And, I mean, there wasn't an awful lot going on other than the chase for top four and relegation, which is always very interesting. But this year has something different because you also have the story of Chelsea and, you know, this disaster of the season after winning the championship, and Man United struggles, although they're still in the hunt, but not playing terrific football for the most part. Then you have the story of Leicester City up in the top four and tied for the top with Arsenal, a couple goals behind, a goal difference. Is incredible, and what they've done it with Leicester is just, you know, basically well coached, good recruiting, great foresight, and put a team together that against Man City a couple weeks ago, I think it was about 20 million a team was the starting 11 as opposed to 300 million the Man City put together. So for them to compete on that level right now, as far as they have, is miraculous.
Isn't it amazing that I still don't think Ranieri is getting the respect he deserves? He's so quiet. He's like the quietest manager in the Premier League. And if that was any other name, you know, he'd be all over the media. But no one's even talking about him. It's almost as if they're doing this despite him.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, obviously, Nigel Pearson did an amazing job winning 7 of the last 9 of the season last year. And he was responsible for a lot of the players at the club now, virtually all of them, including Conte, who is scouted by Pearson, and the chief scout wanted him when Ranieri took over, and they went after Conte, and he was one of the most expensive players they had at about £5.6 million. But saying that, I felt that Ranieri took over a team, obviously, was flying high. But the way he's managed their emotions moving forward, win after win, has been impressive. He's taken the pressure off. You just watch them warm up, James. Every single one of them has got a smile on their face. They have to be able to enjoy their football, because this is getting into territory where the expectations are going to change for Leicester City, because they're doing so well. And when they drop below that standard, people are going to wonder why. But at the moment, it's still this dream season for them.
You were talking off camera yesterday, and you're saying that this must be Ranieri's career highlight. I mean, he's been around the block and back again. You know, he's coached many teams in several different leagues and countries. Hasn't won that much, but still been a very successful, respected manager. But this season, I mean, doing what he's doing with this team that, I mean, I admitted yesterday, I had them going down in August, right?
Yeah.
To do what he's doing with this team has to be a career highlight, surely.
Absolutely. I mean, just the fact that, I mean, there was a high expectations, you know, in the middle of his career when he was at Chelsea from between 2000, 2004, Atletico Madrid, Valencia, Juventus, Roma. I mean, some big clubs, Inter Milan, not great at Monaco, Greece. That's, everybody forgot about that. That was an absolute disaster at his reign at, for the Greece national team. But then, I've always had a lot of respect for him, and never heard any really bad things about Ranieri. I think he's terrific as far as, and like I said, the emotions of the teams. He's running it very well, and he's had some luck with the fact that they've kept relatively fit.
Because, I mean, you're right, they have. I mean, Vardy had that groin surgery, misses, what, one game, and he's back. You know, you expect at some point something bad to happen to someone there, but hasn't done so far. But in your experience, I mean, how much does a manager actually add to a team? It seems like a stupid question, right? But usually, you know, people say, well, in the end, talent will be hard work, generally speaking, over the course of an entire season. But, you know, you've played for some pretty well-known, successful managers in your time. How much does a great manager bring to a team compared to just those 11 players?
You know, that's a very good question. I mean, for the most part, like when we talk about players and teams not playing for a manager, I think that's rubbish for the most part. The reason why, for instance, from my position as a goalkeeper, if I'm not playing for the manager, I'm obviously letting in soft goals, which is going to get me zero, and it's going to get me no extension to my contract. Nobody's going to buy you your interest. You'll be out of the game very quickly. So regardless of the manager, certainly as a goalkeeper goes, I'm not going to play for him. You might not like him. You might not even respect him, but you still have to do your job as a professional. And from there, when you separate a good team or great teams from each other, then you're talking about when managers come into play more from a tactical standpoint and reading the game beyond your average coach. I've had that, and the best I ever had was a guy called John Lyle, who was at West Ham for years and came to Ipswich and got us promoted into the Premier League in 1992. He was the difference maker. He could read a game like nobody I'd ever seen before in the game, and that was primarily why we did as well as we did, because we were a decent team, but he separated us from the rest of the decent teams in the second division, what it was back then.
So although players won't quit on managers per se, it is fair to say that if everyone in that room likes the manager, they're going to give that little extra, and that might give them the edge in a tight game?
I think so. I mean, certainly when there are certain managers that I really had a lot of respect for, you're very disappointed and when they get released or fired. It's heartbreaking at times, and it's just the nature of the game. But also what happens with players too. You know, players you're playing with, they get sold, and the disappointment of that. But yeah, I would say a little bit of extra for managers that you respect. But it's also easier when you got a team that's winning. Like the guy Ranieri, he hasn't had a real dip in form where he's out to try to pull them out of it. The respect to that too.
Okay, so from there, let's go to Man City and Manuel Pellegrini. This is a team that really has no equal from a talent standpoint, I don't think, from a depth standpoint in the Premier League. They tie Everton 0-0. They lost to Everton in the League Cup recently. They drew Leicester over Christmas. They're up and down. They're still just 3 points back at first place. They still might win this thing. But Manuel Pellegrini is a lame duck manager. We all assume he's leaving in the summertime. We all assume that Pep Guardiola is going to take over there. At what point do the players say, well, you know, this guy's leaving anyway? Maybe I'm not going to give that extra inch, and maybe that results in a 0-0 against a team like Everton and drop points in a championship race.
Well, I mean, you have a point, certainly, James, but when you're playing for a club like Man City, this is a completely changed situation from a team like Leicester, for instance, where you're coming in for big money, you're making big money, and also the fact that if you don't play at a level that they expect from you, they're just going to spend more money and bring somebody in to replace you. So your days will be numbered that way. They've been lucky a couple times. I mean, yesterday they came up against Everton and Tim Howard was in the form of his life. I mean, people have said he's a little bit at a dip this year in his form, but he was outstanding. And you got to credit him for that because Man City should have picked up 3 points. So it's tough playing against a team like that, whereas they know that every single game, virtually, teams are going to back it in. They're going to organize themselves. And let's face it, every Premier League player, they're good players. And if they're well organized, it's hard to break down, even for these multi-millionaire superstars. So they found that difficult at times and the breaking teams down that sock it in. And they've come up against a couple really good individual performances by goalkeepers. I mean, Mihail was great for West Brom, too. I remember there at that stage. So they've been unfortunate on a couple occasions, and you add 3 or 4 points onto it, and they'd be top of the league.
We're talking to Craig Forrest, and Craig, doesn't this season in particular, but even the last couple of years, really put into perspective just what Sir Alex Ferguson did at Manchester United over all those years? You know, for two decades, the dominant team in English football, and to see a manager with a group of players have them hungry for pretty much over 20 years, it seemed like pretty much every single game. That's staggering, isn't it? And I think at the time, we knew what he was, but even now, looking back, I think the appreciation grows.
Yeah, he was a phenomenon. And you go right back to the start of his career at Manchester United, I mean, he was a couple of results away from probably getting fired. I mean, he even talked about that. So then he has this longevity of winning teams, producing good players. He was also fortunate enough to have a good system behind him, of course. And you know, somewhat, I'm not taking anything away from Alex Ferguson because I'm probably his biggest fan. But there was a time when there was only a certain amount of teams competing financially like Manchester United. Now there's more competition at the top. I mean, Tottenham's spending big money. Manchester City never used to have money. So Chelsea never used to have money before Abramovich really, or started in the late 90s. But so it's got more competitive, of course. But he still won it just a couple of years ago with a team that wasn't that brilliant, to be quite honest, but they grinded out results, and that was because of him. So he's done it with the competition as well as with less competition and at the European level as well. Absolutely fantastic and staggering. And it's too bad the transition for the next manager wasn't with a better side, because I think they left guys like Moyes and even Van Gaal to a certain extent, although he has spent £250 million, in a position where it was difficult to be successful right off the bat.
Yeah, it seems as if Fergie kind of knew what was around the corner, and it was good timing to say goodnight and farewell.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, of course, somebody like him is going to pick and choose his moments to get out. And of course, that was perfect timing after an unmatched career, really.
For sure. Well, listen, Craig, you've got two more nights to polish off Making a Murderer before you're back in the studio. So I think you can kill it. I think you can do, I think it's 10 episodes. You can do two more a night. You got it covered, pal.
Oh, I think I might do it all today.
Today? Really? After you hang up, you're going to put it back on there?
I might. Yeah, I'm going on pause right now.
Nice. Oh, you lucky bastard. I wish I was there. Listen, mate, thanks so much. Appreciate it. And we'll see you 9:30, or actually about 9 o'clock, actually, 9:30 on Saturday morning. Chelsea, Everton, Bournemouth, Norwich, and the late one on Sportsnet 1 has Villa against Leicester, the heirs to the championship. Thanks, pal. Chat soon.
Pleasure. Thanks, James.
Well, switching gears now to Spain. What a day in Spanish football. What a terrible day, I imagine, for Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid. If you remember last year, Barcelona, they were on the end of a transfer ban for essentially illegal registrations of youth players. Well, it seems as if the identical charge had been laid against Atletico and Real. Both have been dealt a 2-window ban. Now, they can sign players in this window. It's begun already, obviously. However, summer and winter windows going forward, they're out of luck as it stands, although both clubs will obviously appeal to try and make sense of this madness. We're joined by Richard Fitzpatrick, author of El Clasico, Barcelona v Real Madrid, football's greatest rivalry, and a very well-respected writer in all things Spanish soccer. Richard, welcome back to the show. Is it fair to say it's the same charge as Barca had last year?
Yes, exactly. That's it. There's a lot of buzz on the streets here in Spain. All the TVs are covering it, and it's big news. It had been flagged at the time that Barca got their ban, which I can't remember offhand. It's going back a good while. It could be like as much as 18 months ago, but it's more than a year ago anyway, when they got hit with their ban. And at that time, it was flagged that Real Madrid and Atletico were being investigated as well. But we heard nothing about it. I had forgotten about their investigation. And now, all of a sudden, just as Barca's ban finished at the start of January, Real Madrid and Atletico are slapped with the ban. So, like you suggest, it's not an actual transfer ban. It's to do with registration. So, in theory, both clubs could purchase players over the 12-month period that they're banned, but they can't register those players to play. So, for example, with Barca, they signed players, they were banned from the calendar year of 2015, but they signed players, they bought players last summer, Alexis Vidal and Arda Turan, but those guys sat on the bench for 6 months and they couldn't play until just about a week ago. They made their debuts for the club. So, Atletico and Real Madrid, they might squeeze in some purchases before the January window closes, and then they maybe in 12 months' time they'll look to buy players again, but they wouldn't be allowed to use them until 18 months' time.
And I mean, if you're a player who's been approached by Real or Atletico and saying, "Yeah, we want you and we're going to buy you, but you can't play for, you know, several months." Obviously, you know, Turan, he did it, but he could play for Barcelona and Vidal. But yeah, that's a big ask, isn't it? If you're Real Madrid, though, I mean, every year it seems they do traditionally go big on one signing or at least one signing. Plus, they've got a new coach in Zidane. He wants to shape his squad as well. Obviously, a couple of steps behind Real this season and Atletico. This is an enormous blow, isn't it, for Real Madrid?
It's fascinating. You hit the nail on the head there. No other club in the world is defined by its activity on the market. Every year they buy the big Galactico players. So, I mean, you know, in recent times, Cristiano Ronaldo, James Rodriguez, Gareth Bale, the richest player in the world. So they like to make a big bang every summer and create a lot of what they call it illusion. In Spain, a lot of excitement and energy around the club, and it distracts the fans when things aren't going so well on the pitch, when they have a big name player to conjure with. So it's a body blow to them. It's been their philosophy for the last 15 years, this Galactico practice. So it's very, very interesting. I suppose we shouldn't get too carried away if you just take Barca's experience as an example. They've just come off the back of a treble-winning season, and so it didn't seem to affect them too much.
Right.
And we know, like Pep Guardiola, for example, as Barca's great manager and recently was Bayern Munich, he favours having a core panel of about only 18 players. Normally, the elite managers like to have 22 top-class players, two players for every position. But you can get by with, you know, 17, 18 players. You don't have to suffer problems of these star players getting disgruntled if they're spending too much time on the benches, fitting everybody in. They rotate players. All these players can move around from position to position, you know, at that level. So and look at Real Madrid's team, again, as an example, or their squad. It's packed with amazing players. So it mightn't be the end of the world. Zidane will probably look to fill a couple of gaps in the January window. And and just carry on from there. They also have one of the best youth academies in the world. So they have players loaned out all over Spain and Europe, and they can call those players back into camp as well. So let's see what will happen.
But this also clearly affects what Real or Atletico might do themselves as far as selling players. There's lots of rumours. We know the rumours. They're out of control. But, you know, is Ronaldo perhaps on the way out of Real Madrid in the summertime? Is Isco on the way out? Griezmann, Atletico, even Gareth Bale's names have been mentioned with Manchester United. Now, you've got to figure that there's no way these guys are being sold if they can't bring guys in.
Yeah, you would think that, certainly. It looks very likely this summer that either Ronaldo or Bale would be sold. Ronaldo had been out of sorts this season. A lot of that could be pointed at Rafa Benitez, who didn't have a good relationship with him. He was unsettled. He's the goose that lays the golden egg at Real Madrid. He's just been a phenomenal goal scorer, the club's all-time greatest goal scorer in half the number of years that Raul, for example, in number two, scored his goals for the club every year, banging in 50 goals. But he's 31 next month in February. He's had trouble with his knee and that. So the club would be looking to you know, to cash in on him. He's also not a favourite of the president, because the president at Real Madrid didn't sign him. It was his predecessor who signed him. So he favours more Karim Benzema, and especially Gareth Bale. He bought Gareth Bale with the view to making him into the Ballon d'Or player, you know, the star player at the club. So Rafa Benitez has been busy until he got sacked, grooming Bale for the central role in Real Madrid's Hollywood production. But that's up in the air now, like you say, with the transfer ban or the registration ban. So they'd probably be looking to keep both those players as a result.
What are your thoughts of Zidane as the manager? We know he's cut his teeth in the youth team in the second division, essentially, in Spanish football. Yet, though, to get any experience in the top flight, aside from, I guess, his first game or two, has he got what it takes, do you think, to be a great manager? Is he that ruthless type of personality? Is he a great tactician? Apart from being, you know, this all-worldly player who we all loved and respected, do you see in him potentially a great manager?
It's so hard to tell. I mean, it's just seemed an extraordinary move to make him manager. He no experience managing the B team at Real Madrid. I mean, it's not the same thing at all. It's managing the biggest club in the world. But Pep Guardiola didn't have much experience when he was taking on as Barca's manager, and look how successful he was. A lot of those Real Madrid players are self-starters, and you know, he's got the kind of allure and aura about him that maybe he could make them work. He also has the advantage that he's coming in on the back of Rafa Benitez, who is really, really unpopular with the players. So there's a natural bounce after that. The last weekend, Real Madrid were exceptional, 5-0. They beat Depor, who've been playing very well this year in La Liga. So it happened in 2012 when Chelsea won the Champions League. Their squad was unsettled and they just kicked into gear in the second half of the season. So Real Madrid, they're only 2 points off Barca, I think. So they're still in the hunt for the league title, and they have an easy draw in the last 16 of the Champions League against Roma. So it's a competition. So let's see what happens. You know, he has an amazing squad of players to call on, but we'll just have to see.
His cross-town rival, of course, Atletico Madrid and Diego Simeone, 44 points, first place. This guy is charismatic. His teams play tenacious defensive football. There's a big opening in London right now, West London, at Stamford Bridge. Would there be a fit there? That's the rumour, Simeone to Chelsea. Do you think he's leaving this summer?
Pound for pound, he's the best manager in the world. He's an extraordinary individual. What he's achieved at Atletico, like when he arrived, it was around December 2011, 4 years ago, I guess. They were on the floor. They were only a few points above the relegation zone. He comes in, he wins a Europa League title, the cups, the following season, then bring them to Champions League final, wins the league title, when the club have been operating on a budget of fifth the size of Barca's or Real Madrid's. It's an extraordinary achievement. Do I think he'll go to Chelsea? I'd say it's very unlikely. I think he's still got more work to do at Atletico. But the big when he does leave Atletico, he'll inevitably leave one day. It'll more likely be for Italy than England. He played a lot of his career in Italy. He speaks Italian. He doesn't speak any English, pretty much. So he'd be a lot more comfortable there. Also, there's the thing about Simeone is he's a very emotional character. He's an amazing connection with Atletico Madrid. He was the captain of the club when they won the double in 1996. He talked himself about when he came from Argentina that winter of 2011 to take over the management job at Atletico. He was sitting on the plane going across the Atlantic Ocean. And he was literally humming, just the energy was going through him. He was so excited about the project. I can't imagine he would have that sense of belonging to a big club like Chelsea, you know, with all their dollars from their owners. So I wouldn't see that connection being as solid. I'd see him more likely to Italy.
But you know that, you know, every rumor out there right now around the world eventually comes back to the Premier League. It's just the way it is for some reason.
Yes,
you know, it's the stupid money on offer. But certainly Spain has been fascinating so far. As I mentioned, Atletico in first place. Top four looks pretty set right now, but even the battle for those Europa League spots is really tight as well. But wonderful league, and I love watching it each and every week. Richard, thank you so much for this. Enjoy the games, and we'll have you on real soon.
Great, I look forward to that. Thanks.
That is Richard Fitzpatrick, author of El Clasico, Barcelona v Real Madrid, football's greatest rivalry. Please follow Richard on Twitter as well, at Richard_Fitz. Yeah, he knows a hell of a lot about Spanish football, and it's far more than just that. A cultured man, you might say. Check out his Twitter feed for confirmation of that. But yeah, Spain and that transfer ban, I tell you, for Real Madrid, it's huge. It might be bigger, though, for Atletico Madrid. They lose Arda Turan last year, Aleix Vidal. You know, they might be losing the manager this summer. We're going to find out, but that's a team that needs reinforcements. They might be losing Griezmann. That's a big rumor as well right now. Big, big-time money on offer there. 100 million euros is being quoted right now, which is just insane, you think, but he is a very, very good striker and wide player as well. Well, that's pretty much it for the podcast. As far as the Super Draft is concerned, oh, we've got six picks so far. Six picks. Jack Harrison went at number one to Chicago. Philly's been really busy indeed. They've acquired the second pick. They acquired the sixth pick. They have the third pick. Getting very busy. TFC comes in at number nine, yet to pick. As I mentioned, check out sportsnet.ca. John Molinaro has you covered in all things MLS Super Draft. Premier League returns as usual this Saturday. As I mentioned earlier with Craig Forrest, 9:30 a.m. Eastern, Chelsea, Everton. That's a good one. Bournemouth, Norwich, Villa against Leicester. Villa, by the way, in turmoil. Randy Lerner's finally come out and started talking about this club and saying that they're in a very precarious situation. He's pretty much taken another step backwards, has hired another man to basically run the club in his absence. Another man who has zero football experience, which is upsetting the Villa faithful, you might say. That team is likely going down and missing out on all that juicy TV money next year, which is a real shame. Yes, there's parachute payments, but you got to stay in the Premier League. And to see that league without Villa is really sad indeed. And I think they're 8 points back now, safety around about that. Just not good enough. Really sad. Sunday's games also. I'm actually hosting on Sunday, I think. Yeah, I'm back in Sunday with Danny and Craig. Stoke against Arsenal at 11 a.m. Eastern. That has been, though, the podcast. My thanks to Craig Forrest. My thanks to Richard Fitzpatrick. My thanks to Brain Gunning behind the glass. Producer extraordinaire. Rolls the music in just beautifully and cuts out all the F-bombs, which happens so frequently in this podcast. I'll see you Monday with Dobby and Dunlop. Dobby, of course, the three-time now defending quiz champion. If you missed that episode on Monday, check it out. It was a lot of fun for Dobby, not so much for Dunlop. Hope you enjoyed that. Cheers for listening.